Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
We're joined by Sean Devaney, NBA writer for TheHeavy.com. It's been a little bit. Sean, welcome back. How you been, man?
I'm doing pretty well. How are you guys?
We're doing great, buddy.
Can't complain. You know, Sean, everybody was interested in or locked into the Last Dance for the last 5 weeks. But it seems like a lot of the players, whether as opponents and now it seems even teammates, are upset with how this thing turned out. Do they have gripes with Jordan?
Yeah, I can't say that I'm surprised. I mean, this is how Michael Jordan has pretty much treated everybody in his orbit for the duration of his career. And, you know, for most guys, you know, when you're pursuing greatness all throughout your playing days, there's a certain mentality that you have, and you don't want to necessarily be the nice guy. And that was certainly Jordan. Problem with Jordan is that he never turned that off. You know, he's always maintained that even in retirement here at 57 years old, he is still out there grinding axes and settling scores and holding grudges. And I think you saw a lot of that in the documentary. So it doesn't surprise me at all to see, you know, here we are, you know, about a week after this thing has wrapped up, and you still have a lot of people kind of angry at the whole thing. It really does fit with the way Jordan has approached the people around him throughout the course of his career.
You know, it's interesting, Sean, jumping on you, but like I start seeing like these conversations, whether it's, you know, I get these RSS feeds, and it's like, is Jordan still friends with XYZ? Is Jordan still friends with Dennis Rodman? Like, who's he still friends with?
That's an excellent point. And that's kind of what, and look, I'm not judging the guy, however he lives his life. I mean, he's had a very successful time.
You're right. Got billions.
So I'm not going to criticize him for that. And I don't know who his friends are, but certainly publicly, you can look at, you know, Charles Barkley is a great example of a guy who, you know, was friends with Jordan, you know, for more than a decade. They were friends for 15 years from when they were, you know, teenagers and coming up to before they came into the league. And now, you know, Barkley says something 15 years ago about Jordan's stewardship of the Charlotte Bobcats. They were the Bobcats at the time, and Jordan still hasn't forgiven him. And it's kind of like, you know, it's a tough way to go through life, I would imagine. But again, I what do I know?
You know?
Yeah. I'm not gonna criticize how Michael Jordan lives his life. It's just that you could see by the end of that documentary that this was a guy who was kind of standing alone, whose greatness forced him to be alone, and really hasn't changed that mindset.
I don't think Kobe was that different. I mean, Kobe was kind of alone. I think a lot of it was his own doing.
Yeah, but look at what happened to Kobe after he retired. I guess
that's what
I'm saying. That's where the difference is.
What?
Is that Kobe really opened up. He became an ambassador for basketball. He was the great, you know, he was always in China. He was always in Europe. He was traveling around.
Yep.
And he was opening himself up to all these things that he was closed to when he was a player.
And buried the hatchet with Shaq. And, you know, like he kind of like started to make up for all those things. He even said, like, I was a bad friend. And sometimes when you're driving to be great, you kind of are a bad friend, right? It's just, it is what it is.
Yeah.
No. Yeah. And you know, Tim Grover, who was the trainer for Michael Jordan and also became the trainer for Kobe Bryant, he told me something about Kobe shortly after he died. And he said that, you know, when I was with Kobe, he never pretended we were friends. It was always, you know, I'm going to use you for what you can do for me, and then you're gone. And that was really the same kind of treatment that Grover got from Michael Jordan. Yeah. The thing is that after all this, you know, after their careers, you know, Grover and Jordan were never close again. Grover and Kobe were, you know, and they were friends again. Because during your career, you have that single-mindedness, and that's understandable. But once you retire, you know, don't you have to kind of let some of that stuff go?
Yeah, I think you do. I think you do. If you want to. If you don't, then, you know, is what it is. Sean Devaney is with us here, NBA writer for Heavy.com. You know, I wanted to ask you this about Jordan. Like, the two things that, well, I mean, what really shone through for me here during the documentary was, listen, you could talk about the 40-inch vertical. You could talk about the 4-3-3-40 that he ran at North Carolina, allegedly, you know, Roy Williams telling that story. Good stuff. And his athletic prowess was through the roof. What it reinforced for me again, Sean, is his fundamentals was his attention to detail, pivot foot, jab step, angles, left hand, right hand, mechanics, like sound base for shooting. I don't know, and I know it's not LeBron, it's not Kareem, and those are the two other three best players in my opinion. I don't believe there's a more mechanically sound, fundamentally sound superstar than Michael Jordan. I don't think it was Bird. I don't think it was Magic. In terms of mechanics and fundamentals, I think MJ had that too.
Yeah. I would agree with you on that. And I think that, you know, with all the great ones, and Jordan was the best at this, you know, you were in a position where, especially late in the game, even you know, in regular situations, you know, in the third quarter, in the second quarter, whatever, where you kind of knew what they were going to do, but you still couldn't stop it. And you know, Larry Bird had that, and Magic Johnson had that, and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar had that, but nobody had it quite like Michael Jordan, where you knew exactly what he was going to do. You know, the Brian Russell play in Game 6, you know, basically the last play of that 98 season, you know, that's a perfect example. And Brian Russell knew exactly what Michael Jordan was going to do. Couldn't stop it.
Yeah.
And if you go back to the first episode, you know, when Craig Elo, poor Craig Elo, was the highlight, you know, from the 1988 series against Cleveland, the shot, the one that sort of changed the perception of Jordan, it was the same situation. You know, it was a very similar play. It was in the middle of the floor, and it was a mid-range jumper. The Cavs knew it was coming, and they couldn't stop it. Mm-hmm. And you know, then you had 10 years later, Utah in the same exact situation. They couldn't stop it either.
Sean, I wanted to ask you your thoughts on this. I mean, and baseball's talked about this, and, you know, not that it's, like, directly coming from the commissioner, but it's been put out there, hey, listen, if one positive test would derail our return to the field or the court, in basketball's case, obviously, then we probably wouldn't go forth with this plan to get back. So with that in mind, they're obviously both, all sports are prepared to deal with a few positive tests here. What do you think is the NBA's plan if a team loses a superstar or two? Would that be treated the same as two guys at the end of the bench? Like, how do you play the NBA Finals, God forbid, if LeBron James and Anthony Davis have the contract the virus and they can't play?
Yeah, I think it would be the same as, you know, somebody getting a knee injury, you know, Kevin Durant blowing out his Achilles last year. You know, I mean, I think that's how you would have to treat it. You know, that's just how it's going to have to be looked at in terms of the injury protocol. And you're right. You know, it's one of the big questions that is dogging any chance of an NBA return. But you know, one of the big things, and this doesn't get talked enough about, in my opinion, is that you've got to remember that the way the league is set up is, and this has been the case since David Stern and Charlie Grantham back in the '80s. You know, this was one of the ways they saved the NBA was that there's a split in the revenue. There's a direct split in the revenue. So the players have a lot of incentive to come back and play because there is that direct split. It's 50-50 split. If there's no revenue, then the owners aren't getting it, but neither are the players, and it's going to hammer their salary cap next year. So I think that they'll be more willing to accept some positive tests than Major League Baseball will, where there isn't that same setup.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. You know, if Michael Jordan was the hero, the antagonist for the back end of this this Last Dance was the Utah Jazz, and today we lost Jerry Sloan. And it's unfortunate. He never won a title. One of the great coaches ever, Western
He's
Conference.
So good.
He was so good. Put a great team together with Karl Malone and Stockton and a bunch of those guys. But he didn't win a championship. But how should we remember him?
You know, it's interesting because he'll be remembered for those Stockton and Malone teams, but they never stopped losing. You know, it wasn't until the very end, and even then they were still a pretty good team, that they underwent a couple of bad years under Jerry Sloan. There were a lot of people who, he never won Coach of the Year, for instance, and it was because, it's all Stockton and Malone. It's easy to win with those guys. You can win 50 games just by throwing those guys out there. But he was doing it with other players, with Kirilenko and Darren Williams and guys like that. That's a testament to just how good he had been, and I think that he did get overlooked. And if there's a word that I would use to describe his career, is probably overlooked. You know, there was always someone better. There was always a brighter, shinier object. But just the consistency that he had, it kind of led to him being overlooked, and that was probably too bad. He had such a strong compass in terms of what he thought was right and what he thought was wrong. I was in Chicago right when the whole controversy happened with Darren Williams that eventually led him to quit.
I remember
that night vividly.
Yeah.
It was something that was shocking, but it was a reminder that this guy just felt like, you know what, this league isn't what it used to be. It isn't for me anymore. I got to step aside and let somebody else do this.
It's amazing, too. 15 straight years in the playoffs here. And keep in mind, you know, it's not like top free agents were ever flocking
15.
To Utah. They couldn't stand going there. There's nothing to do. There's no nightlife. Right. So you had to build.
They had such a difficult time getting any. I mean, if you didn't draft them, they weren't coming to Utah.
That's my point. Draft, develop, and win the old-fashioned way. Sean, good stuff. T, did you have a last one? Are you good?
No, we're good. But real quickly, but Paul Pierce was, we talked about this earlier in the week, said LeBron's not in his top five. He's like crazy in quarantine, correct?
Paul Pierce has, and God bless him for it, he has a grudge against LeBron, and he's sticking with it. So, all right, go ahead and go with that, Paul.
Yeah.
Everybody knows you're a little crazy for saying it, but, you know, I mean, if you feel that strongly about it and you're able to put yourself out there on national TV, bravo to you, man.
But what is the grudge derived from?
It's the spit game, man.
That he kept losing?
No, it's the spit game, right?
And the spit game.
It's a spit game, and it's a whole Miami thing. I think that rubbed a lot of those Celtics the wrong way.
I don't see KG throwing shade at LeBron the way Paul Pierce does.
Well, nobody asked KG when they
I've seen KG when he does, I don't know if he still does it, that KG 21 or whatever the heck. Every time LeBron came up, he was, you know, throwing platitudes out there. He was showing him love, not like Paul Pierce.
Because he recognizes. Right. Appreciate you, Sean.
Thank you, Sean.
All right, guys. Thank you.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.